In 3, 2, 1.
Caveman brain is the voice inside our heads that holds us back based on fears that may or may not be true. It is the thought patterns and processes we use every day that are no longer working to make us successful. It is how our brains are reacting to these fears, thought patterns, and processes that influence us each and every day to be less successful than we can or want to be. Caveman brain is the thing that can make you stand out in a crowd or hide in the corner. If you're responsible for new business development, controlling your caveman brain is the single best thing you can do to change your trajectory of success. If you've done everything to increase your new business development, but nothing's working, then it's time to turn your caveman brain into your ally. To help us understand how our caveman brain works and to get better results is the results queen, Dr. Jean Ousler. Well, Dr. Jean, we're delighted to have you here. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited. And it took us a long time to come together, but it worked. We were very persistent about it, which was nice.
Well, and I'm excited to have you on. I love the subject matter, what we're going to be talking about. Lots of good little tidbits and strategies that people can use to employ to make themselves better and become preferred in their markets, whether it's an individual business person or as an individual. But hey, before we get started, let's talk about how you got here. So here you are, you live out in the East Coast somewhere. And where's home for you? Where's home?
So I'm a New Yorker. It's funny, I was talking to someone the other day and they're like, why is it that Texans and New Yorkers, the first thing they say is, I'm from Texas, I'm from New York. And I said, well, explains a lot about who you are. So I'm from New York. I was born and raised in New York City. I'm from New York.
New York's such a great city. And I love every time I get to go there. So I love everything about it. But I like to visit. It gets a little crowded for me, but I get it. It's its own community. So how did you choose this path? How did you get on this path? You're in school. You got lots of directions to go. I think, again, from your bio, you were going into theater, but then you diverged and you went somewhere else. How did you get here?
Yeah, so I started off going to school as a theater management major. So I know how to run a theater. And I look at everything as everything's all the words of stage. There's actors and lines and all that kind of stuff. And my mother always said there'd be a professor who changed my life. And Dr. Cohen was that man. He made me fall in love with advertising. I mean, he didn't make me, but I fell in love with advertising. And my first job was at Ogilvy. And then I did the rounds through different types of agencies. And I worked on everything except liquor and food. So I really like it. I like marketing. I think it's pretty hip. I then got married and I had a baby. And I often say to people, I'm not really sure how that happened. And then the story of the birds and bees come up. Yeah.
Yeah. I can show you pictures, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not really sure how that happened. But from there, when my daughter turned a year old, I decided to start my own company. So my daughter is turning 25. Yeah. And so I've been in business 24 years as an entrepreneur. And I've started different companies, started some partnerships, failed, succeeded. And eventually I thought it was interesting because when I was in corporate America, I created my own job, which, you know, again, I probably had an entrepreneurial spirit. And I got a master's degree in organizational development and psychology. And so that's where my love started. And from there, I decided to get a PhD in business psychology. And how you might say, how did you fall in love with psychology? There came a point in my life, in my business, where I was not doing as well as I wanted to. And I couldn't really figure out what the heck was wrong with me. So like every coach, every workshop, every book, everything, and nothing was working. So I was at a conference and, you know, they have those things where you bid on stuff. So I bid on working with a Harvard neuroscientist because I figured like had to be something, right? And the Harvard neuroscientist taught me about the fact that my brain, especially my amygdala, which I now call caveman brain, was holding me back from being more successful. And once I learned that, I was like, oh, everyone has to know that secret. So that's how I got on that path.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting development. And you call it caveman brain. I call it lizard brain or dog brain or do whatever. But so much of that's entrenched at such early stages because that's our first brain, isn't it? We operate from caveman brain. That's what drives our emotions. And when we make our decisions, emotions and logic or reason, we have both of these little computers working. And sometimes they don't help each other. So how does the caveman brain create limitations for us?
Oh, so let's start with when we were cave people. So caveman brain only knows what it sees and what it hears. So it's constantly scanning the horizon, looking for danger. It's like breathing. We can't change it. Now, when we were cave people, when we saw the bushes rustling or heard the bristles rustling, then our brain was like, oh my gosh, there's something going on over there. So it triggers fight, flight, or freeze, floods your body with chemicals to do something. So we run, we fight, we freeze in place. And that's because the whole idea around caveman brain is it's there to make sure you don't die. It's not even there necessarily to protect you. It's there to make sure you don't die, period, in a sense. Nowadays, there's not many saber-toothed tigers for us to be worried about. There's not a lot that can kill us. But yet, caveman brain is always there to make sure we don't die. So think about all the stories that we make up about things that prevent us from being more successful. And in learning more and working through and developing caveman brain, there's four places it comes from. It comes from your parents. It comes from your childhood. It comes from your culture and your life experience. So many of our clients say to us, I was in chemistry or math or English or whatever that might be, and I brought home my test and it was a 97. And my parent, my mom, my dad, whatever parent you want, said, where's the other 3 points? I have people who are in their 60s that can tell you vividly that story. And they're always working for the other 3 points. And I'm like, listen, 97 good enough as adults? Isn't good enough, right? So there's a lot of things that we've learned that impact us now as adults that really hold us back from being the preferred person. And if you can learn what those are and identify them and stop them, then you can be more successful.
Well, that makes sense. And I think it's understanding how the amygdala works too, right? Because from a sales point of view, we've always looked at it from how people make decisions. And the first thing that comes in whenever there's an input coming in, the amygdala sees it first. And then it looks at it and goes, is this in my database? Do I have something in here that I can work with? And so it has a quick automatic response is how it kind of functions. If it hasn't seen it before, it's non-responsive. It goes, I'm not sure about this. Now you need to think about it. So like an analogy I might use is, say you're driving down the freeway and you're going to pass a car. Do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go around them? Do it a prefrontal cortex. You look at your phone, you're distracted. The guy ahead of you slams on the brakes. And at the last second, you look up and you see a windshield full of taillights. You slam on the brakes. Amygdala. And from what I understand, you can't be in both places at the same time, can you? You're either in one brain or the other.
Truth. And the other thing is that when you think about when you're slamming on the brakes, that's when your body is being flooded with chemicals to fight, flight, or freeze. And that's when you feel all jittery afterwards.
That's where road rage comes in, right?
Yeah.
They've been attacked in their mind.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think about marketing and sales, so many things we need as salespeople, we make up that are not necessarily true. Like how many of the statistics, all these stories. Think about how many people stop following up because they haven't heard from the potential client. Who said stop following up? Did the client say that or did you make that decision? That's caveman brain. That's amygdala. That's like, you know, I'm harassing them. I'm bothering them. I don't want to be pushy, salesy, and aggressive. Really? Did they tell you no? Did you make
that
conversation?
Fear? That's actually an excellent point. The key is to be professionally persistent.
Correct.
And until they actually say something to you or come at them with a new approach each and every time.
Yeah.
We take it on as rejection, right? I look at the dating thing. Boys today swipe right to meet girls or vice versa. You know, people say it's like in my day, we had to take the risk. I had to ask you out and you would then go no and face that rejection or hopefully you were kind about it. And they always were. They always kind, but every once in a while they said yes. And it's like, hey, we've done that. And this was before swiping or hooking up on dating sites or whatever the case is. So what happens is it's that rejection, it's that fear. And that's always going to come from the amygdala or your caveman brain, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Fear of the unknown, fear of rejection, fear of failure, which I always say those three fears you can handle. You can actually change that. Fear of success, you cannot. So a lot of us have fear of success because if I was successful, I would have to do X, Y, and Z, or I have to do more of X, Y, and Z. And I don't necessarily want to do that. Or at least caveman brain says that. So fear of success is actually the fear that you cannot change and the one that's most prevalent for people.
Is it like an imposter syndrome? Okay, what if I am successful? How lucky am I? Does that go hand in hand with that maybe?
Sometimes it does. I mean, the thing I find with imposter syndrome, which a lot of our people have, is that someone's going to find out about me. Like, you're going to find out, I don't know this stuff. And one of my most favorite coaches, Alan Weiss, would say, read 3 books and you will be an expert because you read 3 books more than anybody else. Because most people don't read that much books. Most people don't read at all. But if they do read, they're going to read 1 book. So when you read 3 books, you're the expert. So therefore, how could you be an imposter syndrome because you know more than most people, right? And I also say this to a lot of people. Now, you're someplace on the timeline, right? There are people behind you who don't know as much as you and you can help them. And of course, there are people ahead of you who know more. Well, who are you working with? Who's your target audience? And you're most likely working with people who know less than you. So if they did find out you were an imposter, like what? I did is at my kitchen sink. Most people are like, really? That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's learning to work the operating systems in each of those computers, I think. I'll give you an example. And I'm curious, when somebody's operating in the amygdala and they're operating in a fight or flight mode, if you will, let's say we're going into a sales conversation. What I want to do is I want to know how you made decisions in the past. So for instance, if I say to you, what's 2 + 2, you go 4. If I say, what's 27 times 14, you don't know. You have to do the math. One's in your database, one isn't. Prefrontal cortex, amygdala. One's embedded, one isn't. So if I find out how you've done things before, so if I say to you, hey, Dr. Jean, how did you make this decision before? In the past, when you made an acquisition like this, how did you make that call? And you tell me how you did it, more than likely, that's how you're going to do it again. That pattern's embedded. Right? So if I know what's embedded, I can then approach that from a prefrontal cortex point of view with logic and reason to validate. But the decisions that people make usually are particularly purchasing ones. Aren't they usually always based on emotion?
Usually they are. And one of the things that we tell people to ask is, how is the decision going to be made for you to work with us? And what's really interesting is, and what is interesting is, once you know how the decision's going to be made, then that absolutely influences your follow-up. Because you know what the steps they're going to do to make a decision, whether it's you or someone else. No, most people don't ask that question.
No. So you talk about business psychology. How does business psychology vary or is different from traditional psychology? And I realize it's the focus on business, but if we were going to describe the two differently, how would we? Because to me, psychology is psychology. It's all psychology. But is there a difference between the two, or is it just a fancier way of saying, hey, that's focused on this?
It's really a fancier way of saying it's focused only on business. I mean, listen, people are people. I remember one of my boyfriend's dad saying, like, when you come to business, drop your baggage at the door and go into business and then pick up your baggage when you leave, because there's no reason to bring your baggage to work. Right. Of course, we all do. But there is some stuff that's around business and from a psychology point of view, especially around partners. So thinking about people who are partners in business together, the psychology between those two people, because they're not married, they are in a marriage-like relationship. And how do you make sure that those two people continue to grow, because, or three people or four people, I mean, depending on if you have a law firm or an accounting firm or a financial advisory firm, or however many partners you have, how do you make sure that relationship is always healthy in order for the organization to grow? And most of us in our companies don't have healthy relationships with our partners or our leadership team, which then impact the business. So when you talk about psychology of the person, usually the psychology of the person is, I'm focused on me. There's something wrong with me. Why can't I find a person to be with? Why do people reject me so much? So it's a lot of it about me. Whereas in business psychology, it's really about the company. The company is the me. Most people don't think of a company as a person. We do. Right. We actually describe it like you're taking them to a party. So if you were to bring your company, what would that person look like? And then what do we do to make sure that we are healthy for that company? Because most of us don't do that as business owners. But that's the difference between business psychology and regular psychology, is that you're really focused on the company and how does the owners and the leaders work together to ensure that company is successful.
So the different modalities within psychology, so for instance, affect labeling, so to me, that would work in personal life as well. Any of the cognitive therapies to me are active listening or repeating back or re-paraphrasing or what did you hear? It demonstrates high IQ or EQ, right? So we're listening, we're paraphrasing, but it seems like there's just a lot of crossover. So if you get good at doing this from a business psychology point of view, it's going to translate and migrate into your personal life as well, which is another benefit.
Oh, absolutely. I often say to people, practice on your people at home, like practice on your spouse. I always say practice on your kids because they have no idea. And they don't. Yeah. And practice on your kids. And once they go, wait, are you doing something? Then you're like, then go do it at work. And I chuckle because I've been a consultant all my daughter's life. And there's a time when she was 14, she's like, are you consulting me?
Of course. I've always felt that there was very much a similarity between our personal lives and our professional lives. So from a psychology point of view, even romance, when we go in, we're looking for a partner, the way we would start that dance and romance is the same when we go get a new client, an acquisition. So if we suck at personal relationship, we're going to suck at the professional ones too. So can it be fixed? I mean, I know you coach people and you help them with their business development, but what's that look like?
Oh yeah, it can absolutely be fixed. And it's interesting because a lot of the techniques we teach people in coaching for business, they'll then say to me, what about my wife? Or what about my husband? Or about my kids? And it's interesting because we are very focused on business. When I first started being a coach, people were like, you have to take a holistic approach of everybody. Well, no offense, and say with love, I'm not really interested in your personal life. I'm really interested in your business life and how do we get results for you to be more successful. However, all the things that we teach, we say to you, you can use them in your personal life and it will be even more successful because most of us don't do that in our personal life.
Right. Well, and it's interesting how with our clients, we talk one way, but with those we love and are closest to us, we don't always talk the same way. So we don't afford the same courtesy. Like sometimes we talk to our partners, our children, our family, or people in our inner circle, the people we love the most and care about the most. We talk to them in a way in which we would never dare talk to a customer or a client.
I know. Isn't that so fascinating? And I don't understand why. And it was interesting when I had little kids, the pediatrician would say they feel safe enough with you that they can figure out what they can get away with and what they can't.
Maybe it's a safe place.
It's a safe place so I can treat you safely. However, I read an article that said people who live alone are often, the way they do their housekeeping versus how when there's someone living in the house are two vastly different things.
Yeah, right. They've got lots of cats.
They have lots of clutter or dirt or they leave the dishes around. And so why is it that we don't treat the people we love the most with the most courtesy? We just don't. And I also read another article recently that's saying just thank you in your relationship. Thank you so much for doing that for me. It makes a big difference. And when you think about personal relationships, the worst thing for a marriage is disdain. Once you disdain somebody, you are in big trouble. A contempt, disdain. Think about though that in a business relationship, mm-hmm. how that works.
Yeah.
And right. And so therefore, if you want to have a really good relationship with anybody, you really need to be on your best behavior all the time.
Yeah. It's hard to sustain it, but to your point, I agree with you. I think it's something that we have to look at. This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company. And now back to my conversation with Dr. Jean Ousler. You're known as the results queen. That's what your clients call you. And you've got a coaching philosophy that's pretty much results focused. It's no nonsense. How did you get to that point? Like I watched one of your videos and I was really intrigued by it from goal setting to results. It said, focus on the results, skip the goal setting.
Yeah.
Is that where that moniker came from? And maybe explain or unpack that just a little more of what you mean by that.
Yeah. So many of us work on goals, right? It's all about goals. And you kind of wonder like, where did we learn about this goals thing? I really do think it's from sports. Most everything is from sports. And what happens is a lot of us, someone gave us these goals. Like we didn't, develop our goals. So what we found very early on was people would come to us and they would say, because we're usually, what's interesting is we're the last stop on the train. So you've tried everything else. You've been to lots of different coaches. You've been to consultants. None of it worked. And you show up at my place and you're like, I've tried everything. And now you're the last person on the train. I'm like, okay, what is it that you're looking to achieve? That's right. The thing.
What's the result you're looking for?
What's the result you want? What's the outcome? Yeah. What do you want? What do you want? And they were like, well, I have this goal of doing X, Y, Z. Okay, so let's change that goal into what's the result that you're looking for. And what's interesting is our brain doesn't think in goals. Our brains think about in results, outcomes, accomplishments. Think about it. I'm a cave person and I have a goal today of eating. We don't have goals of eating. We have to eat to survive, right? So I need to find food. That's the result. I need to go get that. And we don't say, my goal is to drink water. I need to have a goal of finding shelter. That's just not how we think. So when you start to think about things as results, outcomes, achievements, your brain goes, like you said earlier in the podcast, your brain goes, oh, I get that. Whereas the goal thing, my brain's like, so what?
If you have the result you're looking for, the brain will look at processes that will help you get to that goal is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Get there.
Yeah.
No, it's an interesting thing because I was a goal setter, early in my career and set goals. And then if you don't do it, you get down on yourself and you feel bad or you break it down into smaller chunks or whatever. And instead I started focusing on results, like what's on the other side of the equal sign, what's the process that's going to get me there. But in your videos on YouTube, you say it fairly succinctly. So I think it's a good way to do it. One thing that struck me, one of your videos I really liked was what you call last second mentality.
Oh, last second mentality.
And it actually conjured up a new idea and a thought for me. And I called it a buzzer beater. What are your buzzer? So I just trademarked it. So it's trending right now. So don't even think about it.
Oh, okay. But, I can't steal it. That's beautiful.
I saw that video. I went, she's talking about buzzer beater mentality.
Oh my God. I love that. I'm going to totally use that.
So developing a buzzer beater or a last second mindset or mentality, how'd you come up with that? It's actually brilliant and it makes sense. Unpack
it. So I'm going to unpack that. I'm going to jump out one thing that I didn't say because I didn't answer one of your questions was why am I the results queen? Yeah. So my clients, when I said to them, like, what do we do and get for you? They're like, you get us results. It's like, you're the queen of results. It's so great. You're the queen of results. So I'm like, okay, I'm the queen of results. So I called up my IP lawyer because I IP everything. And I said, I want to be Jean, queen of results. And my IP lawyer said, no, you're not going to be that. He's very good at saying no to me. And I said, oh, really? He goes, no, you're going to be Jean, the results queen. And I was like, oh. And then we trademarked it. We registered more like Coca-Cola. We have a little R next to it. And I talked to a colleague a couple months later. He's like, oh my God, you're such the results queen. It's like, that fits you perfectly. And it's all that's personal branding, right? So that's how that got there. All right. So how did I get to this last minute thinking? All right. I have two ways of doing it because so many of us give up in the last second. Sort of mile of what, last second, right? So I am a North Carolina Tar Heel fan. I have been a UNC fan since the day I was born. My parents both went to UNC. My very first piece of clothing was a Tar Heel shirt. So if you know anything about Carolina ball, we played Nova Nation in the Final Four and we lost in the 0.001. Like we had the game in the bag. I shot the ball. The buzzer went beep. And the ball was scored and we lost. And I was like, wait, what? No, I love Nova Nation. So if you're a Nova Nation person, I'm in your boat. I was like, you know, Nova Nation deserves to win. But the fact is that those Nova Nation guys played to the very, very last, not even last second, like last hundredths of a second.
Tenths of second. Yeah, exactly.
Tenths of seconds to get that. And I was like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. Now I'm going to just forward to the other place is that when in my PhD, I don't tell many people this, but I play a game called Matchington Mansion. So when I get bored, or I'm overwhelmed, I sit down and I play a little Mansion to Mansion. And it's like this game that you have to put things together. And often at the very last move, I solve the puzzle. Now, a lot of times in the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm never going to get this puzzle. You know, I'm not doing it. So I give up.
Right.
But now I'm like, oh, if I play this to the very end, the last second, I could win. That's awesome. And so many of us, if we could play everything to the very last second, like Nova Nation, we could beat North Carolina. And if you could just do that, the very last second mentality. Now I'm going to call it buzzer beater. Like I'll give it to you. That is just brilliant. But buzzer beater is if you have that mentality, then you will never give up. Whether it's marketing or leadership or sales or nothing.
Michael Jordan, you give me the ball. Last seconds, give me the ball. And he didn't get them all. They didn't win all the time. I'll take the shot.
Yeah, but how many people say, don't give me the ball. I don't want to do it. Like I'm not calling that person anymore, right?
That's the fear. And there's your amygdala coming to work and it's trying to protect you. All those fears are coming up that are embedded into you. But no, I love that. One of the other things you talked about, like I say, you've got lots of interesting topics, which all fit around that personal development. So it's your YouTube stuff's great. They're short, they're sweet, they're to the point and useful. They're useful.
Thank you.
One thing you talk about, and I've never heard anyone talk about it, and I have been a believer of this for years and years and years, for decades, actually, in my career, is about visualizing the meeting before you get there.
Oh, yeah.
And man, I love that. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, okay, good. We're on the same page. So when I go into a meeting, and then you can unpack it for our listeners, before I go into any sales call, meeting, podcast interview, take just a few minutes and I visualize the outcome that I'm looking for, how I want to behave in that. And what it does is it sets me kind of being present, first of all. And then I imagine and visualize them, approving of the proposal, whatever it is, writing the check, every step of that process going in. And I remember listening to Wayne Gretzky years ago when he started his career, and they said, hey, Wayne Gretzky, how come you scored so many goals? And he says, I see it in the net before I ever shoot it. All right. And I thought, perfect. Okay. Visualization. Michael Phelps. So when he's swimming, because he's 6-7 hours a day in the pool, they're visualizing. Bobsled, luge guys during the Olympics. What are they doing? They're visualizing. Unpack the power of that for us.
Oh, well, I mean, I think you just did it for me, to be perfectly honest.
I have to say, I'm a believer in this, but this is one that it's such an easy hack and the results are outstanding.
Oh, I know, but most people don't do it. And it's interesting because in our process, when we teach new business development, we don't even actually call it sales because sales is a 4-letter word, although my daughter tells me it's 5. But, you know, I actually will say to myself, okay, I'm going to ask this question. And what are they going to say back to that? And I think about, we actually call this decision tree questioning. It's either a yes, no, or I don't know. And the idea is if you get a no or an I don't know, you always want to get them to a yes. So how do you ask the question to get to a yes? So I literally say out loud, because remember, brain only knows what it sees and what it hears. So I want it to hear me speaking. And I'll be like, oh, okay. I have a conversation with Michael today. All right, let's see. I'm going to say to him this. What would he say back? No, I'm going to say this. What would he say back? And then what do I say that? I'm always going to say back. And then, you know, like, I love the visualization check. And for us, it's either get another meeting on the calendar. So I'm going to ask you for a date and time on the calendar, or you're going to say yes to me and we're going to sign the proposal, right? That's kind of how it is. So the idea is that even just walking through that, because it comes actually from my theater days, when you're thinking about how actors, because everyone's, oh, I just wing it. And I'm like, 99% of actors don't wing it. They know the script so much that it's like it becomes part of them. And that's how new business development, marketing, leadership should be the same way. It's like it just becomes part of you. And the only way to do that is to practice and say it out loud so you know what it is. And even if it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go in the meeting, like we talk about leadership. If you have to say something to an employee, sit down. What would they say? What were you going to say? How does that work? Well, rehearse it like a speech. And once you rehearse, even if it doesn't go that way, your brain's going to be like, ah, I did this. I got that. Which goes back to the thing you talked about in the beginning.
No, it's rehearsing the line. That's actually brilliant the way you do it. We do this in our messaging when we're on, let's say, LinkedIn or sending emails. What can they possibly say to this? Okay, how would I respond to that if they do this? So have that conversation ahead of time that you want to have, or you imagine, or you visualize that you're having. It's actually quite clever. And I think you've really tapped into, with the caveman business growth system, the caveman brain, a methodology, a process in which really will help entrepreneurs. Who's it ideal for? So the website is cavemanbrain.com. Who's ideal for you? Who's an ideal, I can help you and get you the results you're looking for?
Oh, we love lawyers, accountants, and financial advisors. We love them. And it's so interesting because people are like, really, you work with them? Yes, they're awesome. Yeah. The fact that lawyers, accountants, and financial advisors have all the right skills to do new business development really, really well.
Right.
However, they have caveman brain that prevents them from doing it really well because they don't want to be pushy, salesy, aggressive. And it's funny because I was just on a call today. Now, for all the accountants who, and I realize that this is probably not evergreen, but if you are in tax season right now, tax season is the best time to find clients. And all you have to ask is this very simple question. Do you love your accountant? How do you feel about your accountant? That's all it is, right? Like, love your accountant? Because everyone either loves their accountant or they hate them. There's no gray in the middle. Oh, I hate my accountant, right? So for those that hate, you're like, oh, well, I'm happy to talk to you because everyone loves us. It's just so easy. Yeah. And lawyers, they already know how to ask questions. They just have to take off their lawyer hat, put on their marketing hat.
Which is embarrassing. You think they would. You know, trialists do, litigators do.
They ask questions, right? Yeah. And financial advisors are all about building relationships with people because it's all about money and relationships. And yet they can't. So for us, the caveman brain system was actually built for the service providers like that.
Oh, no. Awesome. Well, there's certainly lots to talk about. This has been really informative. So if you're looking to get better results in business development, unlock your potential for better performance, Caveman Brain Business Growth System might be for you. We'll have all your contact information, Dr. Jean, in the show notes. This was a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
I thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.